Hi, this is Joe Roberts with OneWineDude.com, and you're listening to One Wine Dude Radio. Today I'm talking with Derek Mossman, founder of Garage Wine Co. and the iconoclastic director of Movi, a group of independent vintners that are shaking things up in the Chilean wine market. Derek's a pretty opinionated guy, and he's a pretty talented winemaker, and I think it's going to make for some good listening. Enjoy.
So how are things in the Southern Hemisphere?
Things are good. It's getting cold. The sun is going down here.
Well, it's about 90 plus degrees Fahrenheit where I am.
Where are you in Philadelphia?
Yeah, just outside of Philly.
Okay. Then I remember New York summers. Although it's only, well, I guess it is almost June.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Getting warm.
I could use a little, to be quite honest, I could use a little. It's been really cold through harvest. I've never made so many hot water bottles for wine in my life.
Really? And what are you doing? What are you doing with these bottles?
No, we just put them right inside the tanks because otherwise it's just so cold overnight that things just slow down. I don't have any temperature control. We're all natural.
Oh, wow.
Besides what you can put into water bottles. This is what we've always done all along, no? Except they used to be 5-liter bottles, and now they're like, I don't know, 75-liter bidones that you fill up with hot water from the pressure washer, from the, what do we call those? Like, you know, those high-pressure heat washers? You just fill up with those. No, otherwise we would have been, there's no way things would have finished. And we did a lot of things this year, natural yeast. And I don't want to take any chances.
Interesting. There's
a couple of cool rosés come out of it because they'll be the longest fermented wines in Garage Wine history, I think.
Looking forward.
But an interesting year. An interesting year. Michael, some frost, a lot of cold, very low yields. And more than just low yields, very small grapes. So kind of some really interesting, kind of lots of skin and seed. But phenomenally low rate of yields, like 30-something percent lower probably. And in the south, really a little bit lower with the Carignan. But we do two harvests. We do a harvest of like 25 barrels of Carignan and Grenache, and then we do 25 barrels of Cab and Cabernet Franc, separated by like 3 weeks or whatever. Because we're having two very small wineries.
Looking forward to seeing the results. Now,
yeah, you gotta stop in again. We never did that. We could do a barrel tasting sometime. You gotta come down at some point.
My next birthday. Well, the last time I saw you was St. Patrick's Day
right,
at your house.
You're right. I think I put that photo on my website. I think you're still there smiling.
Oh, God.
With black teeth.
Yeah, there's worse photos of me floating around out there. Well, hey, I wanted actually to, first to kind of introduce you. And the concept of Movi, right? Because I think the One Wine Dude readership who'll be listening to this, they won't probably have an appreciation for just how different Movi is from what's going on, generally speaking, with wine production in Chile. And when we sat at your house and tasted through a few dozen Movi wines, you know, one of the things that you said, I'm gonna bring back a lot of quotes from that night. From my notebook, okay.
of mine or of other people?
Of yours. You're quite a quotable guy. You described.
Are we live now? This is all recording.
No, we're live. I'm recording, but we're not live.
Okay.
So if you go totally off the hook, I can edit it out. I can't promise I will, but.
Okay.
Well, you describe Movi, which, you know, for the folks who'll be listening to this, is a collection of independent vintners in Chile. You describe Movi as filling a vacuum when we met. And I was hoping you could just spend a couple minutes talking about what that vacuum is and why Movi is so different than what's typically done in the modern Chilean wine making industry.
The Chilean wine business, it's not any judgment of mine, but the reality is it's a huge business of, I think, $1.5 billion. By very few people, by very few companies. It has the largest winery size by country mile. It's over a little over 300,000 cases. I think the next country producing country in the world is at 45 or something like that. I mean, it is just a very industrialized business. And there are trophy wineries. Somebody has always been known for a great bottle of cab for $10. And they've changed that reputation. You get into the ins and outs of Sauvignon Blanc and Syrah from the north. But I mean, it's always been very large players. And what Movi is are smaller players. Some of them are a little bit bigger, but if they are a little bit bigger, they're people who are very personally involved. For me, Movi isn't so much a size thing as it's Mauro von Siementhal would make probably 75,000 bottles of wine, but he is a Swiss lawyer who went way off track and ended up making wine in Chile and will be personally offended if you try and ask him about his winemaker. He blends the wines. When we do Movi events, you pour your own wines or another Movi partner pours for you, but there's no, in Chile we say promotoras, there's no sending the blonde for marketing because there isn't a marketing department and there probably isn't a fluffy blonde working for the company. but I shouldn't be negative. I should try and be positive. We were 12 founders. We're now almost 20. And they are smaller. They're making very, how do you say, very volitional wines. People had an idea. There wasn't a great how do you say, commercial future in it. They struck out to make it. What happened was, being once Canadian, I'm 20 years removed. I suppose I'm still Canadian, but I've been in Philly for almost 20 years. When this group started, I spoke of David and Goliath in terms that I understood them growing up in Canada. That, you know, isn't it great when the underdog comes back? Isn't it great when a David gets a good run at a Goliath? But in Chile, the system of oligopoly where two companies dominate industries, it just runs, how do you say, rampant all over everything. Wine, where you have very conservative, very kind of old worldly people who also have an overdeveloped sense of ownership. So, in the end, you have a situation, and you have these small companies start out on this mission that we were the rebels, or we were considered crazy because we didn't, you know, speak of just family tradition and just the purity of the water from the Andes, but we spoke about new things that were important to us in our personal projects. You realize there was just this, in Chile we say viento de popa, like tailwind. Suddenly felt like we were just being surged along. And I think what I said in that quote that night was we really felt like there was this vacuum around it. People could imagine other wines from Chile, but they never had access to them. And when we presented them to the world or with a couple of critics in New York a little more than a year ago, suddenly there was this, wow, we thought you guys existed and you finally come out of the woodwork sort of thing. And it was like filling a vacuum. It was almost easy in the beginning to gain notoriety for something from Chile. Chile deserves the notoriety, not necessarily the 12 of us, you know, the grungy folks who began. Just there was a debt with the world as far as Chile and wine goes. We started making amends, I think.
And one thing that we chat about that night and has really stuck with me is that there seems to be a, I guess, monopolistic approach is maybe too strong, but almost exclusivity approach between importers and producers, these very large producers in Chile, so that it's almost as if importers, instead of going off and finding wines that might meet a need that they have, something more unique they're looking for, a particular style or grape variety, the very large companies say, oh, you know what, we'll just make one, we'll create a line and make it for you.
And normally the original, how do you say, cast of, I'm not sure that's with an E or not, of the Chilean wineries, they wanted exclusivity. They couldn't even think of someone else in Chile selling one for their same importer. Whereas Movi, normally, I get going well with someone in Denmark, and he says, you know, this is taking off. This is great. You suggest to me who else in Movi could sell me wines because you don't make enough for me to move all I can move. So some of us with three or four of the Movi partners, we share importers in the States and the UK and Denmark. And the other Chileans are just aghast at this. But then again, they were aghast when we shared tables at tastings, which we thought was great because in the end, we're all here. If I go to the John, then Francesco will present my wines.
Yeah,
and
that rising tide. Raises all boats kind of thing.
Yeah, and and it's funny because there's a certain associativity is a word. I'm translating back from Spanish now. There's a certain kind of that working in groups with synergies instead of competing with people. Weakenomics was a word, buzzword a few years ago. It's almost like a weakenomics applied to the very small scale wineries in Chile. It's worked like a charm.
And it's interesting because it's some of the wines we had that night, some of them really stuck with me, and they're typically the ones that you won't find from the larger producers, like Old Vine, Cabernet Franc, Carignan. I mean, those were the wines that really jumped out at me as unique. And you had said that you're after character. Sort of like you want to reflect this strange cast of characters that you have in movie. Like you mentioned the Swiss lawyer, you got a French photographer, a guy who built submarines,
yeah.
A Scottish miner,
yeah.
Transplant from Canada. It's not your typical band of brothers and sisters, right? From from Chile, or at least it doesn't from the Chile wine industry.
We could go on. There's an Italian count you've missed there.
How could I miss an Italian count?
It's just the whole kind of, I don't want to say smorgasbord, but I guess I just said it. And then it's this whole mix. But no, I don't think all of the styles are necessarily necessarily all of them are going to the extremes of Chilean terroir, like Carignan in the south or Old Vine, Cab Franc, etc. Some of them are much more, I make a cab from the Maipo. People generally think of it as funky, and they think it's rare that a wine that gets, we shouldn't talk points here, but let's say, interesting 90 plus points to say that it has no new wood, and that for them is somehow different, which I've never made wine with new barrels, so to me it's not that different, but there are more typical, I'm not going to say commercial, but I think some of them people would say, well, this is kind of like everything else from Chile, and yet it's a nice bottle of wine.
Talking about oak, and you had mentioned oak and a bit of a fixation on oak aging by the majority of the Chilean wine industry, and that seemed odd to you, and it brought me back to a quote from our time together at your house, actually,
yeah.
In March, where you'd said, the idea that a wine improves with barrels is against our grain. And I thought it was very interesting because obviously that leans a lot more towards a philosophical bent about how you're using oak as opposed to an economic one where, it would make sense economically that you can't use a lot of new oak with a small producer because it's very expensive stuff, right? But it sounds like you guys are saying, well, we wouldn't use that much anyway, right?
We wouldn't. There's a couple of issues here. One is economic, and the other is unless you really, want to make a completely oaky wine, you have to have enough barrels to have like a barrel program and rotate the oak through. Like when we literally began in the garage and there were six barrels. So if you had, the first year you bought six new barrels, I think a lot of new wineries, trophy wineries at least do. They buy all new barrels. And the wines are terrible for a few years because, number one, it's a new winery, so they're in a hurry to sell the wine, so they don't actually give it the time in the barrel either. I'm not against oak, that said. I just think there's just too many wineries trying to earn their stripes by over-oaking things, and that somehow, makes the wines better because, look, they're just like the ones, from Napa or wherever.
Not just Chile.
Expensive ones. No, and normally they have the expensive ones, the Sylvain Moreau, whatever, the chateau with the plaque of wood across the front so the tourists can see them. And to me, that's just bogus. To me, in the end, if you're a young winery, you should be getting to know your fruit. And we should be thinking about getting to know your fruit for 10 years. So if you're just cloaking it in oak every year, it's going to take you a couple of decades to get to know what your fruit's like. I think it's just kind of sad. I mean, if you have the right fruit, you really, to me, don't need that much oak to make a great wine.
Yeah.
I've just tried too many great wines in my life that stick out in my memory, and I've tried too many wines that are like, I'm going to call them wannabes, because they're trying to climb up the scale, right? They want to try, we made a $20 wine last year, now we want to make a $30 wine, let's give it more oak. And then, no, like not.
It's interesting, actually. It's very similar to some interviews I've had with in that respect with younger generations of some family vintners in Napa who are saying, well, we're making wines that we like to make. It's a little bit different than mom or dad made. And in some cases, it's dialing back on the oak because they like it. They like to drink their wine with food, or they like to just have something that's a little less oaky. And they find that when the fruit's really good and flavorful, it doesn't actually require even that much change to the oak regimen. It can be a small percentage reduction, all things considered, but it really makes the fruit shine through when the fruit is that vibrant.
No, I think to me the word vibrant takes it in a different direction, takes it of acidity. And I'm making half of my wines are Carignan, old vine, dry farmed Carignan from the south, or Grenache. And those wines have the acidity there, the low pHs. But to me, that's what carries a wine 10 years. That's what makes a wine drinkable. You know those bottles you buy when your child is born so you can drink with them when they're 19? That's what takes a wine the distance.
Yeah.
It's not the oak. The oak to me, the oak can. I mean, there's lots of brilliant wines that have tons of oak that have so much fruit and they're so well put together, they don't have too much oak. But for every one of those, it seems to me that half a dozen wines that just never merited putting so much expensive oak into them. And to me, the funny part or the ironic part of it all is the smaller producers buy these barrels after 3 years. We buy a lot of barrels that have been used 3 years, so we're the fourth business. It's perfect because the barrel is still breathing, probably for 2 or 3 years more, and it probably lends a little bit of flavoring, but not much. But, I mean, it extends the bokeh, it extends the length of the wine. It does what I needed to do over a year, 8 months. But in a very, how do you say, palatina, a very soft and slow way. And we're buying them from when they don't need them, and that's actually when their wines probably didn't need them most.
Yeah, interesting. When we talked, you guys were stressing character and personality, and a couple things you said about that were you want to have a personality involved in every step of wine production. And that the aim of Movi, generally speaking, right, was to have effort and dreams put in the bottle, right? I guess is to really express people, place, and character, right? Which sounds like it may not be what you intended to say, but one could read that as, like you said, sort of the David and Goliath, where there's this ocean of good value for money, but you know, good wine at great prices, but maybe not great wine at good prices coming out of Chile, and that the aim is more to get back to something, a little more back to basics, a little more down to roots, and getting place and personality in the bottle. And I guess the question is, am I interpreting that right? And if I am, do you feel like you guys are achieving that goal yet in Movi?
I think we are. I think basically we live in a world where there are just far too commodities. There are even now commodities, you could even call a relatively expensive German car a commodity. And our lives are positively affected by commodities. Our kitchen appliances, many of the things that we, sit on or wear, it's wonderful that they can use these economies of scale and make a commodity, fashionable clothes. But I think you're a father with young children, young children as well. I mean, the amount of personal time we have to ourselves in the world today is so little that to me, that food or wine comes from a factory or as a commodity is kind of sad. I mean, in the end, you could say that, there's still many wonderful things in the world. Now, not everyone drives a German car, but there's still handmade Maseratis or something. But any of us are really ever going to buy a handmade, a Maserati with hand-sewn leather? 1 in 10,000. But just about all of us can stretch to afford a $25, $35, $40 Pinot Noir to share for the couple of hours we have on a Friday evening with our best friends and their kids. And to me, that's where wine just should not be commodity, because it's not customization, but it's the personally made something that we can all, how do you say, arrive to, we can all afford this weekend or even midweek. Let's hope so. We're all trying to sell wine here. But yeah. As I'm talking to you, I'm trying to, you know, the iPhone 4 here, so I have to avoid that I'm not mucking up its antenna. But my hands are stained purple. And I let them be stained purple. It's common in my hands, and that's just a part of me for the months of April and May. And that probably even helps sell the wine. But in the end, it's just kind of a part of me that these are handmade. We make 50 something barrels of wine this year, and they're all pressed out by hand. And that may seem crazy, like, I don't know, loom, how do you say when you make these woolen looms and such? You know, we have machines to do that now. But there is something to have a sweater that you'll wear for a decade because someone made it with a little more care.
It's like a why not aspire, you know, for a little bit more, especially when we're talking about wines that come from South America, especially for those of us in the U.S., where land there is much cheaper, labor is much cheaper. So it's in a way it's saying, well, you know, you can get this $12 bottle of pretty decent wine, but for $10 more, $20 more, you can get something that's really handmade and is somebody's artistic expression. Whether or not it's your cup of tea and you think it's worth that money is up to you, but there are a few of us who can't take that chance once in a while in the fine wine world, because it's relatively inexpensive when you compare it to the similar situation in the Napas of the world and Sonomas and Washington, et cetera.
No, I think you're right. I think we have a competitive advantage, but let's call it a competitive advantage. Sorry to sound like such an economist, but in that bracket of the 20-something to 30-something dollar bottles of wine. I mean, our Carignan comes from small producers. We could talk all night. It could be a completely other interview with Carignan. I have, from the beginning, worked with people who discover they have a hectare or a part of a hectare of Carignan on a farm, and we've worked to bring those into our wines. And we harvest them by hand with them. But these are people who, they drive horses, not pickups. They live in a different world than we live in, speaking on cell phones and doing Skype interviews with the other. They just don't, they live in a world 100 years ago. And they take care in, you know, those old kind of, how do you say, like one-prong plow hitting the earth between the vines. And if you try those wines next to a Carignan that was grown in the Bordelais row, you can taste the difference. And you can say it's cabeza, it's old vine, it's many things. But to me, I'm not sure you can taste the sweat that dripped off that man's hands, but you can taste the difference that his work made in tending those vines that way, that I made in seeing those vines and camping out next to that farm with my kids in the Maule. To me, you can taste that difference. And as you say, it might not be your cup of tea, but in the end, at least it's letting the purity of the fruit shine through instead of over-extracting, instead of throwing too much oak at it, instead of leaving it a little too sweet so that it has that, you know, that corpulence that comes from the residual sugars. It's just like letting the real deal show through. And I think there's not just Maui and Carignan. I think Chile has a dozen different things that they could offer that are starting to become available in the market in the U.S., most of them through Movi, but there's other independent producers in the pig industry. They're starting to make some interesting wines, too, because they're getting a grip on this. But to me, Chile has so much more to offer than most American consumers think. And that's, to me, kind of the final message from the independents. You know, like, open your mind, try.
Certainly evident from my trip, and especially in tasting a lot of the stuff that you guys had to pour from Movi there at your house. And I'd agree. I think there, as I taste more and more wines, I find myself in situations where more and more I'm longing for wines that feel like one of the requirements was that a drop of just a little drop of somebody's soul had to go in there before the cork got popped in, you know. And I think I'd agree. I think you guys are doing some really interesting stuff, and for sure, out of the few dozen that we had, there were definitely some wines that stood out to me as having that character there. Hey, and Derek, before I let you go, I'd like to know, just generally speaking, that you guys in Movie have had a lot of good press recently, and I'm just wondering kind of what's next. Now you've got, I think you had one of your guys interviewed in CNN, and you had I think Soul Media Journal did an article on you guys. I'm sort of seeing it, people pop up from Movie kind of all over the place, and that's pretty cool. Are there plans to, like, what's next? Like, are you going to capitalize on that spotlight a little bit? Is there something in the works we should be looking out for?
What we're trying to do is to gather more independents in Chile. Gene Miller extended out to us an invitation to taste the Chile independents, and we're going to take many more wines than just the Movie wines to that tasting that we feel are worthy, and they're in the works of becoming Movie members. But we feel we have to kind of, based upon our initial success, try and open, like more open policy of what other things are really going on. Some of us are involved in a group called the Viñadores de Carignan, which is actually a group of the small and the large who are producing Carignan from the south, from Maule, which I think will make some very interesting drinking in a few years more. We're going to come together and produce wines, and I can't really talk about it a lot yet because it's really not all official yet, but we will be selling wine under a stronger kind of DO orientation, like the Italians would with a Barbera, Barbaresco, things like that, which I think will also be very new to Chile. But in Movi, what we're trying to do is to complement the larger industry, to try and, how do you say, I don't want to use the word diversify, because to me that's the word the big use. That diversification to me means a lack of decision. We think we are a veritable part of the mosaic of Chilean wine, and we think that Chile itself is a broader and more dynamic mosaic than most people give it credit for. I think we need people to try to to go out on a limb more with a more expensive bottle of Chilean wine, to travel to Chile, and to give us a chance, because really, meant we were pigeonholed, and there's so much more going on and so much more to offer in these times. I sounded very promotional.
No, I think it's good. I mean, there you have it. It's another side of Chile, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you and highlight this, because I think even though you guys have gotten some good press, there's still, for most people out there, especially in the U.S., drinking South American wines and Chilean wines in particular, I don't think they really have a view to what's going on with Movi and the unique role that Movi wines are playing in the Chilean wine market. And I think it's great. I wanted to highlight it. So I really want to thank you for chatting with me today, especially putting up with the technical difficulties.
No worries. I really do hope we can taste again one day in a year's time, in 2 years time. And
I hope it's sooner than that.
Yeah, no, but I think you will see change. I think a year ago when the Movie people would all put $100 in a hat, so I could go to a fair in London, and I flew. I think it was cheaper to fly through New York, so I met a couple of critics in New York. I think the difference over that year and a bit has been quite interesting, and I am fascinated to see what we can do, what all of us, the entire industry, can do in another year more, because Chile is it's a hard nut to crack. There's just so many different things to do with wine here. You know, our neighbors had it easy because they did Malbec, and it just was an instant hit, and it's so enjoyable. But really, Chile is much harder, because it's just so many variations on the theme.
Yeah, as I like to tell people, it's not just the fact that very long country, not very wide, you do get quite a bit of diversity, you know, north to south. But it's actually, in terms of winemaking, it's more important is what's happening west to east. in Chile, and that makes a huge difference in the type, the type of wine that you can make. In different regions, you can get pockets of pretty hot areas, even in the south.
No, and I think another thing that you will find from Chile in the near future is the recognition of mountain-grown wines. And that's not just garage wines, but there are other people making mountain-grown calves, even Chardonnay up high in the Maipo, that today, because of the bloom of Limarí, are not being recognized. But in the, for the south, mountain-grown, and we have the Andes. And they're huge, and they're long, and there's just so many places that were planted 20, 30 years ago, and those wines have not been recognized. That's because the focus is elsewhere. There's just so many focuses that you could have that it's taken a while. But where we are making our wines high in the Maipo, those wines are going to fly in these times. They're just slowly now being deciphered to be different and being recognized by certain critics. But that mountain grown will be something else from Chile, and I don't think anyone's quite expecting.
Based on what I've been tasting, I think you're right. Higher elevation, especially with some of the dry farm stuff when it comes to reds, that combination was pretty magic when I was down there. I know you guys in Moby have a few of those, a couple other areas. I think De Martino had a couple that I thought were exceptional. So I think there's a ton of potential there for really characterful, unique wines. But like you said, people need to have their mind open to that.
No, I think it's kind of open your mind up. I think we have to all be kind of open to many, many, many things. But I think Chile really has a lot to offer in these years, in a price point that is still interesting. It's just not that expensive to spend $25 or $30 a bottle of wine if you have a few hours with a couple of friends that you really want to enjoy it with.
And I hope you guys are successful in that. With it staying that way, because I'd like to buy these wines under $40 a bottle if I can.
But I don't think that'll change much for us. These have been very interesting times, but our means of doing things are different. We've had Moby people live all over Chile. We've got the Scottish Minor in the far north. We've got Gilmore in the deep south, and I happen to be someone who lives close to. Closer to the center of the population of Chile in Santiago. And what we've done since the beginning, we've had visiting people like yourself who come to the house for dinner. And that's just made it that much more, just keep your feet on the ground, this works. It's wonderful to spot we've had Oz Clark, we've had tremendous people come through our house, our family house, and they've taken the plate to the kitchen because they felt they came to a family dinner. And that's just, to me, worth everything. We're not going to be losing. We're not going to be flying off into the clouds with any ideas of raising prices anytime soon. This is it's a family business that began in the garage, and it'll be that way for a good time to come, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of that, so it's Garage Wine Co. is your particular brand, right? It's garagewineco.cl.
And it sounds very generic, but in the end, we did begin in the garage at a time when no one in Chile knew what a garage wine was. it was a gag that stuck, and the bottle stands out, so it's kind of too late to change now.
I think it works. And it's movi.cl for everybody listening who want to check it out, movi.cl. Hey, Derek, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it. It's been great to reconnect with you, and I really hope to take you up on a return visit. Then I love the food when I was there, and I'll definitely be bringing the plate back to the kitchen for more of that barbecue.
Okay. Hey, cheers. Good to chat, and we'll hopefully stop in New York and get you in on a tasting of new things sometime in the near future.
I'd love that. Please keep me posted.
Okay.
All right, cheers. Take care, man.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.